Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hello, campus cronies. Welcome back to Campus Crime Chronicles. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Turner, higher education professional and true crime addict. In every episode of this podcast, I take a deep dive into some sort of true crime that occurred on a school campus or a crime that's associated with a college or university in some way. For each episode, I rate the seriousness of the crime from 1 to 5 on my serious crime scale, with 1 being completely not serious, possibly even a little humorous from time to time, to 5 being extremely serious. This episode is rated a 5. On the night of May 11th, 2019, 3 friends met for what was supposed to be a relaxed evening by the pool and hot tub, laughing, drinking, and soaking in the music. But by daybreak on Mother's Day, May 12th, 2 of them were dead, and the only survivor had a story that would raise more questions than answers. This episode is titled Hot Tub Tragedy. So without further ado, let's get started. In 2019, 43-year-old University of Georgia professor Dr. Mary Ann Shockley, better known as Doc Shock by her students, had just wrapped up the spring semester and was ready to relax and unwind. She and her boyfriend, 41-year-old Marcus Lillard, a finance guy at a local Kia dealership, were days away from leaving for Ecuador, a study abroad trip Mary Ann had arranged for her students. Marcus was planning to tag along as her assistant. But before they headed out of the country, the couple decided to spend a day hanging out and enjoying some downtime together while still in the U.S. On Saturday, May 11th, they visited some local eateries and establishments in downtown Milledgeville, Georgia, where the drinks were freely flowing all day. At some point that day, they stopped by Marcus's dad's home before they decided to go somewhere with a pool. According to a 48 Hours episode, Marcus took Mary Ann to visit his friend, 69-year-old Clark Heindel, whose backyard was the perfect oasis, equipped with both a pool and a hot tub. That night, the 3 friends gathered at Clark's home, which started off with a jam session. Clark played the accordion while Marcus tried his hand at the conga. Marcus explained that he and Mary Ann were just about to leave for the night when he somewhat jokingly asked Clark if he had any acid. Clark said no to the acid, but he said he did have something else, some ecstasy, or MDMA, also known as Molly. So instead of leaving Clark's house, the couple stayed back and all 3 of them took the pills provided by Clark. According to Marcus, though, the night got incredibly fuzzy after taking the drugs, and by sunrise the next day, May 12th, Marcus was the only one still alive. Marcus told reporter Jonathan Vigliotti on 48 Hours that there are many gaps in his memory from that night, not only because of the ecstasy, but also because they had been drinking nearly all day on top of it. But he went on to explain what he did remember from the night. Marcus said he decided to take a walk into the woods adjacent to the property to gather some firewood, right about the same time that Mary Ann decided to get into the hot tub. However, he said, Marianne begged him not to leave. She wanted him to stay there with her, and he described fear in her voice as she said, quote, baby, get back in this water with me right now, end quote. When the reporter asked Marcus why he didn't stay, he simply replied, quote unquote, because I'm an idiot. Regardless, Marcus went on to explain that he wasn't sure what Marianne was afraid of, but he swears up and down the ecstasy they took was extra potent, and it was making them all pretty loopy. I mean, ecstasy is known as a drug that acts as both a stimulant and a hallucinogen, producing an energizing effect and distortions in time and perception, according to the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. You see, Marcus admitted that while he did go into the woods to gather firewood, that wasn't the only reason he took off, leaving Marianne behind. He was basically having a bad trip from the drugs they had taken. But from what he remembers, he said the two of them, he and Marianne, got into the hot tub at around 9 p.m. that night. At one point, he's not sure the exact time, but he got out and wandered into the woods as Marianne begged him to stay back. But instead, he said he wanted to recreate a scene from a documentary called The Last Shaman, where the main character, while under the influence of drugs, participates in bizarre rituals like being buried alive. He said he and Clark had been discussing the documentary earlier in the night. Marcus recalled, quote, I said, I'm going to the woods to dig a hole, end quote. So he proceeded into the woods and simply laid down for an undetermined amount of time before he eventually wandered back to the house. He said, quote, I was so out of it. I couldn't make a sentence, so I couldn't speak. I can't remember anything past her saying, don't leave me, end quote. When he did return to the house, he could see Marianne slumped down in the hot tub with her chin up to her nose underwater. Marcus said he called out her name, but she didn't respond. As he got closer, he noticed Marianne was completely out of it and unresponsive. His immediate thoughts were that she had just passed out while in the hot tub, so he quickly pulled her out of the water. As he placed her on the pool deck, Clark made his way over at the same time. Clark asked Marcus if they should call 911, but Marcus said no, because he didn't comprehend just how bad the situation was, according to his account. Regardless, they realized that Marianne wasn't breathing, so they both took turns giving her CPR, but they delayed calling 911. When they did finally call for help, it was over 2 hours later, and it was too late. Marianne was pronounced dead at the scene. Now, when the Baldwin County Sheriff's Department arrived, they immediately began to feel a sense of unease. Sheriff Bill Massey recalled that it was one of the weirdest crime scenes he has ever seen. Massey said, quote, the feeling at the scene was totally different than any I'd ever been to, and it was a very strange feeling that everybody noticed here, end quote. You see, as the story of what happened started unfolding, police had some serious questions. For starters, if Marianne was unconscious and not breathing for so long, why didn't these dudes call 911 much earlier? So the deputies decided to separate the two men for further questioning to try and get some answers to the bizarre situation. While Marcus was placed in the back of a police cruiser, Clark wasn't as cooperative. Apparently, he was kind of wandering around aimlessly, and he wouldn't stay put in the places they told him to stand. He also wouldn't stay away from the pool, even though they instructed him not to go near it. And he began insisting on speaking with his lawyer. He was acting so strangely that the sheriff's department had to assign a deputy to keep watch over him. But when that deputy received a phone call and turned his back for a split second, like a child wandering off in a store, Clark was gone. Nobody realized this, though, until they heard a loud blast that had come from inside the home. Clark had wandered into his house, where police found him deceased in his bathroom from a self-inflicted gunshot wound. Police also found a handwritten suicide note left behind on the kitchen counter. The note read in part, quote, I am very sorry. I don't know what happened with Marianne, but it was on my watch, and I am so sorry for the family and friends, end quote. According to 48 Hours, Clark did not admit any guilt in the letter, and the rest of it mainly instructed his heirs on what to do with his possessions. So, officially, Marcus Lillard was now the only surviving witness from that night. Soon after, Marcus was taken to the police station for more questioning, where he was interviewed by Michael Mabin, a special agent for the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, or the GBI. It was now the early morning hours of Sunday, May 12th. When Mabin told Marcus about Clark's suicide, Marcus literally fell out of his chair and collapsed onto the floor. And he immediately began speculating on what might have happened when he walked off into the woods, pointing the finger directly at Clark. Marcus said, quote, "There's a pretty good chance that Clark got in that hot tub with her. I'm going to say there's a very high chance of that. I mean, really high chance," end quote. Then, when Mabin asked if he thought maybe Clark did something to Marianne, Marcus replied with, quote, "I don't think she would have did it to herself, and I know I didn't do anything," end quote. At this point, police weren't sure what happened to Marianne. At first glance, it appeared that she might have drowned, but something they thought peculiar was that she had a large gash on her forehead, which had been bleeding profusely. Apparently, Marcus admitted that when he pulled her out of the hot tub, he dropped her onto the pool deck, which he claimed caused the gash. Regardless, though, an injury like that definitely left them scratching their heads, so they would need to wait until after an autopsy was performed for more definitive answers. Luckily, they didn't have to wait long, and the medical examiner released the autopsy results the next day, on Monday, May 13th, 2019. And y'all, when police received the results, they quickly began investigating Mary Ann's death as a homicide. According to the 48 Hours episode, the medical examiner, Dr. Melissa Sims Stanley, concluded that Mary Ann died as a result of asphyxia due to strangulation. The report stated, "The manner of death is best classified as homicide." So what exactly happened to Mary Ann that night? Well, police were about to focus their attention on the only two suspects who could know, except one was dead and the other was alive. Almost immediately, police discovered that Marcus was still on probation from a crime he committed in 2015 when he was convicted of selling marijuana and possessing methamphetamine and cocaine. Since he was still on probation, authorities kept him in custody as they were investigating Marianne's death. At the same time, police began looking into Clark Heindel, who had his own issues prior to his suicide. According to 48 Hours, he was a former therapist who had lost his license to practice psychology in 2017 after a female patient filed a complaint with the state licensing board. She had alleged that Clark had engaged in a sexual relationship with her as well as provided her with marijuana. But regardless of his skeletons, investigators found no proof that Clark had anything to do with Marianne's death. Plus, Sheriff Massey was an acquaintance of Clark's. The two had known each other for many years, and Massey recalled that Clark had lost his 6-year-old son to a rare form of cancer. So, considering all that Clark had been through, Massey believes that is the reason he chose to die by suicide after Marianne had died at his house that night. Massey explained, quote, "Losing his psychology license, the death of a young son, that had had him depressed for years. The embarrassment of it all, and it happened in his house," end quote. Additionally, when police first questioned Clark on the night of Marianne's death, prior to him going inside his house, he had told police that he never actually got into the hot tub that night. Instead, he said he stayed in the shallow end of the pool, about 50 feet away. So, considering all this information, investigators shifted their focus to Marcus as the prime suspect. Marcus, however, adamantly denied harming Marianne and continuously maintained his innocence. He also started pointing the finger more toward Clark, saying Clark must have made a pass at Marianne, and when she rejected him, Clark strangled her. Marcus also suggested that the ecstasy might have been to blame. He said, quote, "If that pill made me so stupid, maybe it made him, for once in his life, a violent guy," end quote. But again, there was no evidence of that. In fact, there was much more evidence of Marcus being the violent one. So let me give you a little backstory. Marcus and Mary Ann met in the late 90s when they were both students at Georgia College, and they both worked at the same local restaurant in Milledgeville. During that same time, Mary Ann's younger sister, Ayla, also attended Georgia College, and she said her friend and roommate at the time began dating Marcus. However, according to Ayla, the two didn't date very long because her friend said she got a weird vibe from him. Plus, Marcus admitted that drugs got the best of him back then, and he ended up dropping out of college completely. Fast forward a couple decades, and Marcus's and Mary Ann's paths crossed again in 2017. Marcus was on the road for work in Athens, Georgia, where Mary Ann was a professor at UGA. He knew Mary Ann lived in Athens, so he invited her to lunch. Marcus said the two immediately hit it off and clicked. He said, quote, "We spent every possible moment together on the weekends. We were super in love with each other," end quote. However, Marcus was known to, well, not be relationship material. And most of Marianne's close confidants, including her sister Ayla and even one of her students, Shakara Magid, didn't really approve of the relationship. Ayla said, quote, "He's somebody that you go have a good time with and then you send him on his way," end quote. And when Shakara met him, she thought Marianne could do better, to say the least. She said, quote, "I didn't particularly care for him. I couldn't really put my finger on it, but I didn't like him," end quote. Even Marcus himself admitted that he was somewhat of a ladies' man. He said, quote, "Somehow God continued to send women my way that were way too good for me, and I would date them and I'd take them for granted one right after another. It was a steady pattern," end quote. That is, he said, until he rekindled things with Marianne. And according to 48 Hours, whatever type of relationship they did have seemed to suit Marianne and her busy lifestyle as well. Plus, she and Marcus had a similar history of past relationships. While Marianne had been married and divorced 3 times and had 2 children, Marcus had been married and divorced 2 times and had 1 son. But Marcus's 23-year-old son, Carson, offered an interesting perspective on his dad. Carson said, quote, "He's the most charismatic person I've ever met. I mean, he's just got this kind of aura about him that sucks people in. Anywhere he wanted to go, there was a woman there that he could shack up with and stay with," end quote. And y'all, it says something about you when your own son thinks you are capable of murder. You see, when Carson found out his dad was dating Marianne, Carson said he cautioned her that his dad had a Jekyll and Hyde personality. Carson said, quote, "Nobody knows a father better than their own son. He was on cocaine my whole life. He's angry and violent, and you're going to see it. If I could tell you anything, it would just be to get away," end quote. Then when Carson found out about Marianne's death, he was certain that his father had something to do with it, describing him as a malignant narcissist. Carson said, quote, "He was headed toward destruction and was determined to bring someone with him," end quote. Of course, all of this was being taken into consideration by police as they were looking into Marcus. But perhaps the most compelling evidence against Marcus was from witnesses who came forward saying that he had a history of choking multiple women he'd been involved with. According to Sheriff Bill Massey, a woman called him at his office and she was extremely upset. He recalled, quote, and she said, "Sheriff Massey, Marianne Shockley didn't drown. She said, Marcus choked her to death," end quote. Massey went on to explain that the woman identified herself as an ex-girlfriend of Marcus, and she informed Massey that she strongly suspected that he had choked Marianne because he had previously done the same thing to her, specifically during their sexual encounters. During the phone call, Massey asked the woman if she was willing to come to the police station for an official interview, and she agreed. Once there, the woman told investigators that Marcus had a choking fetish and that it was a regular part of his sex life. She went on to say that she and Marcus had had sex probably 100 times, and choking was involved in at least 30 of those times. The woman said the erotic choking was generally consensual, but that one time he went too far. She said, quote, "He choked me long enough to where I lost consciousness and my body crumpled to the floor and he just left me there," end quote. Marcus, however, said this ex-girlfriend was exaggerating, although he didn't deny the actual choking. Instead, he offered, quote, "It was really more of a place to put your hands for control. Just a little light pressure to the corroded arteries, that was really about it," end quote. Regarding Marianne, he said he only tried choking her once during sex, but she had told him that she did not like it at all and was not into that thing. So he said he never tried it again with her. But Ayla, Marianne's sister, does not believe him. She said, quote, "I believe that they were having sex and he choked her and that it was what caused her death," end quote. Nevertheless, after this discovery, you know, his choking fetish combined with the autopsy results from Marianne's death, well, investigators felt like they had enough to charge Marcus Lillard with Marianne's murder. But due to COVID slowing down the court systems, Marcus wasn't formally indicted until nearly 2 years later in March of 2021. He was officially charged with 4 different counts consisting of felony murder, aggravated assault, involuntary manslaughter, and reckless conduct. Once charged, he was held without bond. Marcus, though, continued to adamantly deny the charges. So a murder trial began at the Baldwin County Courthouse a little over a year later on April 4th, 2022, nearly 3 years after Mary Ann's death. During the trial, Assistant District Attorney Tammy Coffey laid out what the prosecution thinks happened to Mary Ann the night she died. ADA Coffey said, quote, "After they got in the hot tub, I think that they engaged in sex. I think he choked her. I think he choked her too hard and for too long," end quote. As part of their case, the prosecution brought in six different women, all ex-girlfriends and or sexual partners of Marcus, who all testified that he had choked them or attempted to choke them during sex. And two of the women even testified that Marcus had choked them until they passed out. However, Marcus's defense attorney, Matt Tucker, pushed back. He said, quote, "All of it was consensual. They're still alive, so, I mean, how is it even relevant?" End quote. But Mary Ann's sister, Ayla, thinks the testimony of the six women was more than relevant. It also demonstrated how callous and dangerous Marcus could be. Ayla said, quote, "It's one thing to gamble with your own life, you know? If you want to do drugs, if you want to choke yourself out, I mean, okay. And one of his girlfriends, he just told her to shut up. So that showed a disregard for women, period," end quote. During the trial, more details surfaced from the night of Mary Ann's death. For example, according to the reporting of Joe Kovac Jr. for The Telegraph, Marcus began calling and texting female acquaintances, including two respiratory therapists, asking them how to revive an unconscious person. Even though one of them told him to call 911 right then, which was about 11 p.m., he waited nearly 2 hours to call for help at around 1 a.m. But Marcus's defense attorney attributed his intoxication as part of the reason why he didn't call 911 in a more timely manner. Tucker, his attorney, said, quote, "No evidence was put up ever that he put his hands on Mary Ann. The state has not proven that Marcus put his hands around her and strangled her. They didn't prove their burden," end quote. The medical examiner who performed Mary Ann's autopsy, Dr. Sims Stanley, also testified during the trial. And she explained her results, that the cause of death was a classic case of strangulation, including busted blood vessels in her eyes. However, Tucker pushed back on this too. According to the 48 Hours episode, Tucker noticed that Mary Ann's hyoid bone was intact, so he consulted some experts who considered that to be unusual for strangulation. So Tucker insinuated that whoever strangled her might have just been too old and not strong enough to break it. In other words, he was pointing the finger at 69-year-old Clark Heindel, who was no longer around to defend himself. During the trial, Tucker also offered the jury an alternative explanation of what might have happened to Mary Ann. And instead of a homicide, he suggested it could have just been a terrible, unfortunate accident. During his cross-examination of Dr. Sim Stanley, Tucker tried to get her to admit that, perhaps, Mary Ann could have died due to the amount of ecstasy and alcohol in her system, coupled with the heat of the hot tub. Tucker recalled what he asked the medical examiner on the stand. He said, quote, "Now, ma'am, it's true that this hot tub was 107. They're only supposed to be 104. That didn't have a factor with the body temperature being that high? With having the high levels of MDMA in her system, with them drinking all day, this had nothing to do with it?" And she was like, no, she just disregarded that immediately, end quote. But according to 48 Hours, in her own autopsy report, Dr. Sim Stanley revealed that Mary Ann had cardiomegaly, or an enlarged heart. And apparently, medical experts say that this medical condition can lead to sudden cardiac arrests. After 4 days of testimony, the prosecution and defense delivered their closing arguments on April 8th, 2022. And after only 38 minutes of deliberation, the jury came back with a verdict. They found Marcus Lillard not guilty on all four counts. And those in the courtroom were left with shock and disappointment, including Marcus's own son, Carson. Carson said, quote, "And it's just not guilty, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. With each one, my heart just kind of sunk lower and lower. I thought there was no way that he could get off," end quote. Ayla had similar thoughts. She said, quote, "We were in utter shock. Everyone was shocked. And of course, I look over at Marcus and he's got a smirk on his face. And my blood was boiling. End quote. Ultimately, the jury felt like the prosecution just didn't prove their case. Juror number 11, Taisha Davis, interviewed with 48 Hours and explained her thoughts. She said at first, she really believed Marcus was guilty, but that changed over the course of the trial. Taisha said, quote, "My first impression was he did it. He committed this murder, and whatever they tell me, it's not going to prove to me that he didn't do it. The professor was his girlfriend, and Clark Heindel was a 70-something-year-old man. He couldn't have murdered her. And I knew Marcus did it. I just knew he did it," end quote. However, just 4 days later, at the end of the trial, Taisha wasn't as convinced as she initially thought. She said, quote, "I felt like the prosecuting attorney, she painted the picture that Marcus Lillard was a womanizer. He was a narcissist, but they didn't prove that he was a killer," end quote. During her interview on 48 Hours, Jonathan Vigliotti asked her what she think did happen to Marianne. She replied with, quote, "I don't know what happened. That frustrated me because we don't know what happened to her, or if she was strangled. If she died from strangulation, who strangled her?" End quote. After the verdict was read, Judge Allison Burleson spoke directly to Marcus, and she told him that she did not agree with the jury's decision. She said, quote, "Mr. Lillard, I've come to quite a different conclusion than what the jury has come to. It is quite clear to this court that the only person you were concerned with that night, May 11th, 2019, was yourself," end quote. Afterward, she remanded him to prison to continue serving out his sentence for the parole violation. According to the Telegraph, Judge Burleson sentenced him to serve an 8-year term for violating his probation from that 2015 drug charge. He could now remain in prison until October 2030, but it is possible he will be released sooner. Regardless, Marcus interviewed with CBS News from prison in his orange jumpsuit. When Jonathan Vigliotti asked him how he felt after the verdict, he offered, quote, "My conscience is very clear when it comes to Mary Ann. Do I miss Mary Ann? Yeah, I was lucky to get that time with her that I did, and I cherish that," end quote. He also said that he now thinks Clark Heindel had nothing to do with Mary Ann's death, and he agrees with his attorney, Matt Tucker, that Marianne's heart stopped from the combination of ecstasy, alcohol, and the high water temperature. He said, quote, "One thing I know for sure is that was no normal ecstasy. It was super potent, and I believe it was made with evil hands," end quote. Then, when he was asked why or what made him think that, he said, quote unquote, "Well, it killed two people." Regardless of the verdict, I don't want us to forget the reason why the trial took place in the first place. Because a terrible tragedy occurred and a talented, enthusiastic, caring professor lost her life far too soon. So I want to wrap up this episode by remembering her and painting a better picture of who Dr. Mary Ann Shockley, Doc Shock, was. Growing up in Georgia, Mary Ann was one of four children, including her older sister Suzanne, her younger sister Ayla, and her brother Reed. Driven by the environment and different living things around her, Mary Ann had a true knack and deep love for science. After receiving her bachelor's degree in biology from Georgia College and State University, she went on to earn a master's degree and a PhD in the Department of Entomology at the University of Georgia. Entomology, the study of insects, quickly became her passion, as did entomophagy, which is the eating of insects. While at UGA, Mary Ann participated in numerous community outreach projects, including speaking to K-12 students about the importance of pollinators, such as bees and fruit flies, the viability of insects as a food source, and the value of insects and arachnids in supporting life on our planet. For over a decade, she planned, organized, and taught a summer education program at UGA called Bug Camp. Her favorite professional activity was introducing people to recipes that included insects, like crickets and mealworms. And during the bug camps, she would often make Rice Krispie treats with freeze-dried crickets or Chex Mix with roasted mealworms for the campers. As an entomologist and researcher, Mary Ann was a published author in numerous academic journals, and she contributed to books on the subject of edible insects. More recently, before her death, Mary Ann visited South Africa, where she discovered that there are scores of local populations on the African continent that subsist primarily on insects and ground insect meal. She returned to the U.S. more excited than ever about the role her beloved bugs could play in eliminating hunger and food shortages, yet simultaneously increasing protein levels for people with metabolic issues. Upon her passing, Mary Ann left behind her three siblings, Suzanne, Reed, and Ayla, as well as her two teenage children, Paul and Nora. Ayla said that she misses her sister more than ever and constantly thinks about her. She said, quote, "I think of Mary Ann every single day. I have her name on my bracelet. I'm wearing her earrings right now. Mary Ann was the most beautiful spirit. She worked hard. She cared about things that other people didn't care about, and the teeny weeny creatures that keep us alive, that keep our world turning." End quote. Okay, y'all, that brings us to the end of Chronicle 101, 101 episodes already. Also, I apologize for my short little hiatus. I realized it had been like a month from when I last published, but man, life has just been busy, but in all the good ways. But now we're back on schedule, okay? So be sure to check out my social media where I post photos associated with each case and episode. You can find me at Campus Crime Chronicles on both Facebook and Instagram. Okay, well, that's all for today, so bye for now. Campus Crime Chronicles is researched, written, and recorded by me, Nicole Turner, and it's edited and produced by Giari Gassaway. Campus crony Alexis McDonald is my research assistant. Tune in again in 2 weeks for the next chronicle. I promise the next chronicle is really coming in 2 weeks. Okay, bye, y'all. Thank you.